evening, everyone, and welcome to another weekend wrap. I nearly said Choosing Art Live then. it's hard to keep track of the days with all these stupid public holidays. But anyway, it's the weekend wrap show, and we're wrapping up another good win by the Adelaide Crows. And joining me tonight is Nikki. How are you going, Nick?
Very good, considering we've now had our best start to a season ever.
Yes, absolutely. And Macca, how are you going, Macca?
Well, as you know, mate, my main computer got some work, and you have expertly my second working. Well done.
Keep your finger on that button, Macca, because you're dropping in and out. All right, so without further ado, let's go through the weekend's results so far before we talk about the Crows. And on Friday night, we had the Power playing possibly the worst AFL team I've ever seen. Like, seriously, have you ever seen a team play as bad as Carlton did against Port? Not since the old Fitzroy days, I don't reckon.
All I know from that game is that I was driving home from, we had a trial game on, and they had Juddy on, and they kept repeating that the lowest score at the Adelaide Oval was actually held by Juddy. And they were trying to keep, they were barracking for Carlton just so that Juddy still kept that record.
Oh, they were terrible. They were terrible. The Power, 20 goals, 17, 137 to Carlton, 6 goals, 11, 47. And I'll tell you what, if I was a senior player in the Carlton team, I'd be feeling pretty shit right now, because that's a long season ahead of you.
Why did Gibbs want it out?
I'll get it, mate. There weren't too many players. They had 6 first-year players in that particular team. And I can't remember.
All right, Macca, I'm going to cut you off there, Macca, because you're fading in and out. So remember what we said before, that slider bar, you've got to move that back the other way because you're dropping in and out. Meanwhile, we had on Saturday, we had the Western Bulldogs playing the Lions. I really thought the Lions were going to do the business, even though they were in it for a long time, just due to their kicking and the Bulldogs' lack of accuracy. But eventually the class shone through and the Bulldogs got up 17 goals, 20, 122 to the Lions, 14 goals, 690. Either you guys see that?
Would you say class, or would you say a more experienced and in terms of fitness team? Because I think that's more what it was than anything. Yeah.
Well, look, you're probably right, actually. I think that in the end they had more contributors across the ground. And they just, the Lions were out on their feet by the end of it and they just couldn't keep going. So, never mind. We had the Giants after a slow start, pantsing the Swans, 15 goals, 15, 105 to the Swans, 9 gold, 963. A lot of people are still holding faith with the Swans, but I reckon they're just about done.
Yep. I'm with you on that. I think there's a bit of demoralisation that's going on within that group.
Yeah, they don't look, I mean, they had a few back this week and didn't really give a yelp after a promising start. How you going there, Macca?
Well, I'm sure I'll make it work. How's it going?
No, it's still dropping out, mate. You're going to have to drop that slider bar so that when you talk, it goes into the green. All right, we also had the Dockers getting up and take your finger off of the button, Macca.
I haven't got a finger on it.
We had the Dockers, 9 goals, 13.67 to North Melbourne, 9 goals, 8.62. How did North manage to lose that one, Nikki?
Because they're North.
Unbelievable.
North got Northed again. I think that was I saw that comment on Big Footy and I just thought, yep, that was pretty much it.
Unbelievable that they could lose that match. And it's the same every time. They just don't protect leads at the end of games. I mean, Frio's forward line was open in that last contest. Well, the last two contests, actually.
Yeah.
What's wrong with getting numbers behind the ball? Surely someone's got to be asking Brad Scott what the hell he's doing, because they just fall for the same trap over and over and over again. They don't protect leads with a minute or two to go. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, today we had the Cats outlasting a gallant St Kilda. 9 goals, 12, 126 to 13, 10, 88. And we had the Hawks beating a disappointing West Coast who just can't get it together away from Subiaco. 19 goals, 11, 125 to 11 goals, 874.
Yeah, West Coast just, I don't know if they're scared of really big stands. The only thing I can think of as to why they were, they're so petrified of the MCG.
I actually think they're scared of hard work away from their adulating fans, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, talk about a, and I hate to be politically incorrect, but talk about a schizophrenic team. You know, they're like two different teams, home and away. It's they're just so hard to pick at the moment. So anyway, as it stands at the moment with two games left in the round to go, we have on top of the ladder, we have Adelaide and Geelong both on 20 points, possibly to be joined by Richmond, depending on the game tomorrow.
See, I'm not sure about that now. I tipped Richmond, but I'm in two minds about it because, what is it, Martin apparently has sore groins.
Yeah.
And Melbourne actually haven't been playing badly. And after we've seen what happened to West Coast.
Yeah, Melbourne get Hogan back this week, which will straighten them up a little bit. I think yeah. They'll miss Lewis still. But been an interesting game because Richmond, I reckon they have a few mental hurdles to get over just to stay in the top half a dozen this early in the season. So, and Melbourne have a point to prove. They should have been at least another win up this season so far, in my opinion.
Yep.
So if they have any metal at all, they will come out firing. GWS sitting at fourth, just travelling along nicely. The Bulldogs starting to get it together a little bit. And if in case anyone didn't realise, it was Robert Murphy's 300th game this weekend. It passed really? By without a whimper, really, didn't it?
No, I didn't hear anything about it at all. Nothing.
Just ridiculous. Port at sixth on, three wins with West Coast and surprisingly Frio, although Frio's percentage is horrendous, so they're vulnerable. And then Melbourne and Essendon both playing in the next couple of days on 8 points, along with the Saints and the Suns who have already played. And then the Pies on 4, maybe to improve. Brisbane on 4, Hawthorn on 4, having their first win this weekend. Carlton on 4, they're lucky to be on. How did Carlton beat St Kilda, honestly? And then North and Swans yet to open their account. What are your overall thoughts, Nikki? It's almost a battle of 4 or 5 already, I reckon.
I think most people are starting to think that. I'm still not fully convinced about Geelong. GWS are a little up and down. They are fairly powerful, but I think there's some vulnerability going on there, even though they do have some fair names out.
Yep.
I think there are issues regarding their mental toughness.
Mm.
Port, I'm still not too sure. I think they're like they were in 2014, which is very one-dimensional. It was very effective because nobody quite worked them out. But I reckon towards the end of the season, they might get found out. And Boak with his hamstring is quite a loss for them.
Yeah. I think that's probably Port's vulnerability. Their best 22 isn't too bad. It's probably, 5 to 10, I reckon, depending on, draw and all that sort of stuff. But they get thin very quickly. And a couple of, it's shown when they have to bring in a Matt White or someone like that, they fall away quite quickly. And if it wasn't for Robbie Gray, he's an absolute superstar. Let's face it, he's playing on half a groin and he's kicking ridiculous goals and just owning the forward line. They work hard through the middle. They've got some decent tools. They're shaky down back. So they're always going to struggle to contain other teams, but if they can get on top in the middle, they'll trouble a lot of teams. But once they get one or two out, they're a bit they're a bit short, a bit light on. So I expect them to maybe finish in the bottom half of the eight, only because I don't think there's too many challenges this year.
No, I think there is. There's definitely that group that are up the top, that little, just slightly better.
Yeah.
And then there's actually quite a few in that middle slot. So it's a lot more even this year.
Yeah.
Than it has been in for a long time.
Yeah, that, well, I mean, last year was pretty even. I don't see it quite as even this season. I think there's some definite sliders, and the teams that we expected to bob up so far have just been sputtering along, your Melbournes and your St Kildas and that. Collingwood certainly haven't kicked on at all. And, you know, when you're talking about your expectations for the season, you'd expect a Sydney Swans to be around the mark, you'd expect a Hawthorn to be around the mark, and both those teams are out of it. So, yeah, interesting times. Anyway, let's move on to the Adelaide-Gold Coast game, and the Crows did it pretty comfortably again. 23 goals, 15, 153 to the Gold Coast Suns, 13 goals, 8, 86, a margin of 67 points. Nikki, what do you reckon?
Kind of what we predicted. We thought it would be around that many. And interestingly, it's exactly the same points as what we had last week. We also kicked 153, which is a bit odd.
No, we're consistent.
We are. We consistent to have one quarter where we kind of go slightly to sleep. Yeah. And this quarter was the last one, but we still outscored them in the last though, didn't we? Pretty sure.
We did in the end. It was a bit of a struggle for a while there. They kicked five and we kicked six in the end, but a couple of hours were late. I actually thought it would be a little bit tighter, and when Tars went down early, I thought, well, it's game on here, because centre clearances, and we'll go through some stats in a minute, but centre clearances, they really troubled us. And they actually should have done better with Peter Wright and Tom Lynch. And one thing that I didn't see from Rocket E the whole time was playing both of those tools deep, which would have really troubled us, in my opinion. They kept playing Wright a fair way up the ground, and I felt like they could have put some pressure on us deep, playing those two tools sort of inside 30. So they didn't really take advantage of their centre square, just about call it dominance, really, because their efficiency inside forward 50 was pretty atrocious. Anyway, let's get to some head-to-head stats. And we overused the ball, I reckon, this week, after me saying we don't overuse the ball. We had 422 to 403 disposals, but we had 217 handballs and 205 kicks. Now, I don't know how you saw it, Nick, but some of our handballs was very attacking, and we actually, this is the first week that I've seen us use handball to move the ball forward rather than just clearing space.
It was, once again, it was another game style that we saw from us. We've done it in little patches, but not as concerted as we did. And I thought there were some really good ones there. I mean, one of the ones, unfortunately, that Brad Crouch with his turnover, he was expecting us to have a player out there, and unfortunately it was one of those quick fire handballs, and there was a Suns player. But noticeably, both him and his brother, how fast their hands were just coming out of stoppages. So whilst, as you said, yes, we didn't do so well at centre clearances, once they kind of got it, we closed them down. We put so much pressure on it and then just exploded from there.
Yep, our pressure in close was really good. And whereas normally we'd use handball to clear space and then look to get field position with a long kick, this week it seemed like a directive from the coaching staff that we were going to handball through their midfield press. And, you know, by and large, we did it fairly effectively. I think we tended to layerize a little bit going forward, but we'll get to that. Anyway, the kicked handball ratio certainly told in the marks. They outmarked us 104 to 80. Tellingly, and a really good sign, though, we out-tackled them 63 to 49, even though we had more of the ball. That's a real indictment on Gold Coast's work ethic, in my opinion. And that tackle count actually flatters them, because in the first half, they hardly stuck a tackle the whole game, the whole first half. What else have we got here? Disposals per goal, again, you know, under 20 disposals per goal and under 12 disposals, nearly 11 disposals per scoring shot. It's just insane compared to the competition averages.
It's for me, the I really liked that tackle pressure, and they did keep reiterating that on the commentary, that the fact that a team that's up by as much as us normally don't have that tackle count, and the fact that we did was very telling to them about how on song we are.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
Even though we're winning easily, we are still doing all those little defensive stuff that we have to.
Yep. What else we got here? We did them in contested possessions by 10. We had a few more uncontested possessions, probably given our game style. Our disposal efficiency was up over 75, which is good, 77.5. We still won contested marks and marks inside 50, despite our overall marking number being down. Clearances were even, but Footy Wire isn't showing me a stat that I know. I got off AFL, which I think was 21 to 15 centre clearances, Nikki, against. What was your take on our efforts in the middle?
Witz is very underrated. He's actually been playing really well this year. So he was getting the better of those kind of taps against Jacobs, and because we had a lot of goals, therefore it went back to the centre a bit more than there were actually stoppages around the ground. But around the ground, I thought Jacobs was smarter on him, and I think he did have to change up a little bit as to how he took those centre clearances. He was looking at doing those. So the fact that we could lose the centre clearances, but we were applying quite a bit of pressure on it, we forced them to turn it over almost straight away.
Yeah, what I saw from the centre clearances and looking at it again, we weren't very good at protecting the defensive side of the centre contest. There'd be a little laneway out through behind Source where Willits had put it down into that space and someone had run through it, and we weren't really playing defensive side very often. What we were able to do is come in off the wings and put pressure on that outlet kick into their forward 50, which meant that often they'd turn it over or it was an ineffective kick. I didn't think, and I mentioned it earlier, I didn't think Rocket structured up their forward line particularly well, especially when Talia went down. They had a real advantage there. I mean,
yeah.
Peter Wright's no slouch. And whilst I thought Hardigan did pretty well on Lynch, I don't think they actually worked hard enough to isolate Lynch on Hardigan, because one out, you know, Lynch is going to beat most players. So, you know, I think that was actually poor coaching by Ede, considering they did have quite a reasonable dominance in that centre clearance situation. But our runoff half back was just fantastic.
I wonder if why they were moving right up so high was because of how high our forwards actually press. And so they actually needed a decent marking option around that area, because their other half forwards, it was being turned over too quickly. So therefore they pushed right up. And what I found interesting was we left Lever back pretty much.
Yeah.
And we left Hardigan on Lynch. So if Wright went more back, then Lever took him, more forward for them.
Yeah.
But when he was around the half forward or higher, it was one of our smalls that was contesting against him and often doing well.
Yeah, it was McKay or someone like that. And to me, it's a waste of a 200-centimetre key forward. It shows that their half-forward flanks and their small forwards weren't working hard enough, and probably also shows that Willits wasn't working hard enough around the ground. I just felt like they were a bit of a rabble Gold Coast, and they didn't actually know what to do with the ball when they had it. You know, their smalls are pretty good, and their midfield's one of the better midfields in the comp, if you ask me, personnel-wise.
Yeah, they are.
And they certainly, when we were overusing the ball and turning it over, they certainly moved the ball well in transition, but it was their forward 50 entries that just seemed all at sea. And I'm not quite sure with those two tall blokes and Archie who did it right, but you've got Matera down there as well, who I thought was quite down on
the
day. We
kept him fairly quiet.
Yep. I just felt like they were too one-dimensional going forward and they lacked system.
Yeah, we were able, because we bottled up the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Because we held that and they liked to play through there, they just really couldn't go around the outside. Whereas we go, okay, if you don't give us a middle, then we're going to go this way. Or we'll go back and we'll switch it and we'll go in that way. Or we'll actually pull you out so we can make sure we can get the middle. So we've got a few different ways of doing it. But they just couldn't figure out a way through. They did it every so often when they got a fast break, yeah, which is going to happen every so often, and we know that with how high we're pressing up. But because of how high we're pressing up, it means we're getting those turnovers and we're getting repeat entries and repeat scores.
Yeah, and to be honest, the only reason I think we turned it over a little bit going forward is because we just try to be a bit cute. One too many handballs, a low percentage kick forward. You could tell that I was quite frustrated in the second half because I felt like we went into showboat mode far too early. And I think they tightened up a little bit at the beginning of the third and just were a little bit more efficient.
Yeah.
But Gold Coast tended to only be able to get that rebound when we overused it. I didn't feel like they won too many contests. It was more that we gave the ball away. PJ Crows has raised the Jenkins question, saying we look more adaptable without Jenkins. I'm not sure whether we look more adaptable. I feel like, I actually feel like we look a little vulnerable, but who could underestimate the impact of Andy Otten?
Yeah. He's just such a smart footballer.
Look, we forget how good he is overhead. We forget how good he is at positioning himself. He did drop a couple of marks, but I thought the hysteria on the big footy game day thread regarding him not...
ridiculous.
I mean, come on. He took, and we'll get to individual stats in a minute, but he took 10 marks or something like that, 9 marks or 10 marks, maybe dropped a couple. We're playing a twilight game. It got a bit slippery.
Yeah, you could see players falling over.
Yeah. So, but, you know, he's a spud and we better drop him, according to big footy. Which is why we love that place so much. look, I think Jenkins in is a definite. I mean, there's two parts to that. PJ Crows, I reckon. One, he frees up Tex a little bit more, and two, he's a better chop out in the ruck than Sauce. And I reckon Sauce is just starting to tire a bit because he is doing a hell of a lot of ruck work and just getting a very short chop out from Otten and. Never thought I'd hear myself say this, Nikki, but looking forward to getting JJ back.
can we kind of put that in gold plated and put it somewhere up for posterity that you actually said that once?
No, let's move on. Right, individual stats. Matty Crouch, 35 touches, 17 and 18, which is a good ratio. He had 4 marks, 3 tackles, 4 inside 50s. Went just a little bit inefficient, 65.7%. He was far more. Both Crouches were more efficient in the first half, and then it fell away a little bit for both of them. Matty Crouch had 9 clearances though, and 4 rebound 50s, which is really pleasing. It shows that he was working back quite hard. I thought Matt played pretty well.
Yeah, he did. And you can't. I do want to sit there and watch it again, but some of that work he was doing in close was you miss it watching it first time. But you go in and see how influential he is watching it the second time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And his brother, now, I was very, very sceptical, I must admit, of Brad coming back. I thought he needed another one, maybe even 2 games in the sample. But 33 disposals against a good midfield, 13 kicks, 20 handballs, 8 tackles as well, which is one aspect of his game that I really enjoy. 3 inside 50s, went at 63.6. Again, he was up over 70 at halftime, if I remember rightly. So that's
evening, I'm back.
Oh, you're back, hey, Mecca. Good on you, mate. 3 yeah, clearances as well. Stop interrupting, mate. I just felt it was... he looked a different player.
The Brad and Matt, they made a pretty pretty formidable unit together. And but the one thing, probably they can improve a little bit on their efficiency. I think it's about 66% roughly for both of them.
Yeah, we just said that, man.
I'm sorry, mate. And I've been doing things like trying to get a computer to work. Yeah. I thought our midfield did okay, but we did lose a set of clearances. I think it was 10-5 at half time, and we can do a little bit better than that. But the one I was really impressed with was Kirkley Hampton.
Yeah, we'll get to him. Vardy in the chat says Brad was more explosive. I agree. He looked like he was running on top of the ground a lot more than he was last year, even after a few games and supposedly getting his fitness back. He just looked a little lighter, a little stronger, and certainly in the first half looked like he was right on top of the ground.
Just on, I think it was last week when we were talking the SNFL, and I might have been on Tuesday night, and I talked about Brad and said there was one thing that didn't make the highlights was him just kind of holding back against South a little bit for one of the contests, and he then just intercepted the handball. He also did that against Sturt with a little tap down and intercept. And just watching him do that to Ablett, just that ability to know that a player of that caliber, who didn't have a good game by what he had been like the previous week, but he's still Gary Ablett, and he's still got quick hands and that kind of thing. But that just ability to do that and then take off, and his repeat efforts as well, was really pleasing.
In fact, I noticed our midfield in general were very good at actually getting a hand in to intercept or to deflect an outlet handball from in tight. It seemed to be a bit of a focus. We seemed to be very attentive and trying to cover their flicks out. Rory Sloan, I put a lazy 20 on him today for Charlie, because I reckon if the umpires have got half a brain, I don't care how flashy and brilliant Dangerfield looks. I don't think there's a more valuable... Him and Martin are probably the two most valuable midfielders in the comp, I reckon.
Yep.
No, I would have to agree with you.
Danger's not playing well the past 2 weeks because he's been injured.
Yeah.
And yet Rory's just keep on keeping on.
This is a bloke that's come back from a fractured eye socket, right? 13 kicks, 17 handballs, 30 disposals, 1 mark, 1 goal, 13 tackles, 5 inside 50s, 13 contested possessions, went at 76.7%, 9 clearances, 4-1%. I mean, it's just another beast of a game, and he has to... I don't care what anyone says, he has to get 3 votes from that game.
I agree.
Now, he's in the goal a game, right?
Yep.
We don't play him up forward.
No.
Martin and Dangerfield get rested up forward. We don't do that with Sloan.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the other thing I was going to make is that we were worried that we weren't going to be very good at the inside grunt side of the midfield. But when you look at it, and you've got Rory there with 13 tackles, and I think Brad had 10 off of memory. And
he had 8.
8. And Courtney Hampton had 10.
Yep.
So, I mean, between them, they've had 31 tackles. I mean, I think it's almost more than bloody Gold Coast had themselves.
Well, Gold Coast had 49. So, between, you're dead set right, Macca. Between those three players, they've just about had as much. If you put Charlie Cameron in amongst that and another couple of midfielders, Crouch and Atkins, we've out-tackled them. And let's talk a bit about Kirkley Hampton. I thought by far it was his best game for the season. He got involved a lot more. Only the 7 kicks, 14 handballs for 21 touches, but 6 marks, 2 goals, 10 tackles, as we mentioned, a couple of inside 50s, went at 81% efficiency, and got a couple of clearances. He's working close, and his ability to find space with the ball and not panic was a real eye-opener this week, I felt.
And his ability to just say "don't argue" to 3 guys in a row.
Yeah, he did that 3 in a row. But I used to see him when he was playing with GWS. I was a bit of a fan of his back there. But they didn't play him where they should at GWS, which he is in the midfield. They played him at half back flank because they are very, very, very rich in the midfield. But
And I was hoping that we would pick him up as a relatively cheap get of a player that will be a very, very good player. You have to remember, he hasn't played for a year, and then he's just developing, and I just think he's going to get better and better, and he's going to become a very good player for us.
I agree. And he gives Charlie a little bit of a chop out. Those two, Charlie's a bit more outside than Kirtley, but in terms of pace and creativity through the midfield, like Charlie hardly played through the midfield all game.
We kind of rested him a little bit this game, I think, by the look of that.
Yep, and he'll benefit from that. Obviously, he's got probably a bit of soreness, judging by the ice last week. I felt that Brady Smith also was really good off halfback. 12 kicks, 10 handballs, 22, 5 marks, 5 inside 50s, which is obviously where he comes into his own. For those people saying that Brody Smith can't kick, Sanders, 86.4% disposal efficiency. Just another really solid game from Brody, and he's back to his best, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, you know, if Sanders says it, I hope you're listening, Colonel. If he says he can't kick, it means he's a top kicker. Sanders is never right.
No. Sanders has got some good points, but sometimes he... I think he likes to take the opposing view just to ease up the boredom a bit.
I know, but I'm only saying that to aggravate him, actually.
Tommy Lynch, I thought, had another outstanding game. 15 kicks, 5 handballs. Not a key position player either, Sanders. 20 disposals, 10 marks. Won Scorpus's Game of Crows this week. I had to leave. I only had 6 because Tiles went down. 3 goals, 3 from Lynchy. Probably should have had 1 or 2 more.
Yeah, Lynchy has an expression that you will notice that all the commentators, no matter who and what game they use about him now, is the connector.
Well, and the telling stat, and the stat that shows how hard Lynchy works, is that he had 10 marks for the game, but 5 of those marks were inside 50. So that means that he's taking marks up and down the ground, and he's also making space and creating an option in our forward half, Macca. And for him to be able to cover that amount of ground, I mean, they always used to talk about Revolt's engine, but he'd have to have the biggest engine of any forward going around at the moment, surely.
No, undoubtedly, in my opinion. Because he took marks in the back line as well. I mean,
yep.
And then he'd run the whole length of the ground and end up in the forward pocket. He's another outstanding contributor. I remember when he started by playing with St Kilda, he'd only get a game here and a game there, and they never ever had the opportunity to settle down and make a game for himself. So I'm really glad they did treat him like that, because he's been a gem for us.
Yeah,
on game day this morning, Daisy Pearce actually watched our game, and her first comment was that she's absolutely sure that Lynch must blow up his GPS just with the amount of running that he does. And they had Gian Siracusa on there, and they asked him, you know, when you're scouting, what do you do about Adelaide and you've got a player like Lynch? And he just talked about that, yeah, trying to stop him is very hard because of how hard he runs both ways.
Of the rest, I thought we had a lot of serviceable players. Rory Laird got his 33 touches, 7 marks, was reasonably good across mopping up across half back there. Rory Atkins was very good, 11 and 18, 3 marks, 8 inside 50s from Atkins, which is exactly the stat you want to see from him. I don't know what's going on with that hair, but...
I was going to ask Nikki, with it from a woman's point of view, what did she think of it?
Well, it was
Don't
a pretty
be sexist,
good dye.
Macca.
No, it was a very good dye job, by the way. But for me, I just think it was somebody's obviously told him that blondes get more votes.
Blondes get the votes. That's exactly so
that's what he's kind of done. It was really hilarious, though, that we had a case in point during the song. The three Rorys were not together. Now, have the other two disowned him, or did he just want to get next to Douglas because then he knew he was going to be on all the photos?
I'll go along with the disown theory, I think.
Yeah. I think it's probably a bit of both.
I also thought Riley Knight did very well when he only got 73% time on ground, which was equal with Menzel and only 1% above Brad. But I just feel like whenever he comes on, he makes something happen. the three marks, the four inside 50s, which is, again, the stat you want to see. And he runs at 84.2 disposal efficiency this week. He just seems to be able to know where to put himself, and he gets himself involved, which is great to see for a bloke who's only, he's obviously a third string rotation at the moment.
What he brings onto the ground is energy, and he's hard. He's hard. You can bash him and build him, and he'll get up and keep going. And I love him as a player. I just think he's symbolic of what a side should be, because, you know, he's not our number one player, but he busts his guts, and he runs, he tackles hard, he just does everything you would like a player to do.
He's like Sloan. He's a Jack Russell Terrier. See ball, get ball. And if somebody else has got the ball, I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
And they did say that taking him off and resting him was a precaution, but that's what Pike said, whether we believe him or not, etc. But God, he looked pissed off. He wanted to still be out there.
The other bloke that I neglected to mention, who I thought had a really good game, was Kyle Hardigan. Didn't feature much in the stats, but
agreed.
When your buddy at centre half back goes down and you're facing the two tools at Gold Coast, your heart must be in your mouth a little bit. But I felt not only did Kyle stifle Lynch as best he could, but when he did have ball in hand, he seemed relatively assured. So I thought it was an excellent game from Hardigan, and a team high 10-1 percenters too, with 95% time on ground. He would have been pretty stuffed by the end of it.
But if you knew before the game that he'd keep Taylor would go off and he'd keep Lynch down to two goals, you'd say, I'll take that.
Absolutely. Yep. Now, a couple of questionables. I thought Miller did better this week. 17 touches, 2 marks, couple of tackles, a couple of inside 50s. Worked his way into the game okay.
For me, his first quarter needs to be the standard. He needs to play all four quarters at.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually, because he was very much involved.
And he was actually hard at the ball. There was quite some nice intent that was happening, and then he kind of relaxed a little bit for the last three.
Yeah.
Now, relax means not going in, Nikki, yes.
Yeah.
Well,
he was still around the contest.
Don't forget, Macca, and I've been hard on Miller this year so far, and I'll continue to be, but he is only 19.
Yeah.
And remember, we used to have a bloke called Simon Tregenza who used to knock up getting the ball on the outside, and if he could have kicked a little bit better trickery, he would have been so valuable. David Marshall was another who never got a contested possession in his life.
On Tregenza, go back and watch Modra's highlights. How many of those highlights involve Tregenza kicking to him?
Oh, yeah, because he just floated him up there beautifully.
He knew exactly where to put it for mods.
Come on. Trigger used to kick with that bent foot, and it just used to balloon straight up in the air.
Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Yeah. But let's have a little discussion before we wind up on Troy Menzel. I'm interested in both your thoughts.
Glad you're raising him. Yeah, I'm glad you're raising him, because he was going to get the big rap. Look, somebody tell me, what has he got? I've seen him now in the limited amount of time in both the SAFL and in the AFL level. Well, this is not, if they pass as a dummy off or something, because this doesn't appear to be the guy I saw play in a Carlton jumper. This guy almost can't play.
No, he can play, Macca, and he played, but we're having to change the way he played, because Carlton, as you would have seen on Friday night, not taught how to play football, and they haven't been taught how to play football for years. They just get high draft picks, they put them out there and say, go play. There is no structure to the way that Carlton plays. When you come to a system, we have a system. You have to play to a certain system because the game has changed, which is why Carlton is so crap.
Right,
and last year, in the SANFL, I was actually really pleased with how he went and how he developed, because the one thing we really wanted to do was work on pressure and to work on his tank. And for what I saw last year, he has a hell of a competitive nature going up and back, and he was really doing that. And towards the end of the season, he was playing really well.
Hang on. Well, did you not watch on the other night?
Because I was talking about the SNFL last year.
I'm talking about the AFL, Nikki, which were in accounts.
Well, we're talking about Miller, and we've raised this about Hampton as well, that we're forgiving Hampton for not being as well in terms of high possession,
etc.
No, let me finish, Macca, please. Macca, let me finish, please. Because playing in the SNFL, you've got one group of players you're playing against. The speed and the pressure is different, and we know it's a huge step up in the AFL. By coming into our AFL team, he's having to learn that forward line. That's something that is brand new for him. Now, he's been selected the past couple of weeks, and we all knew he was stiff to get dropped out. So, obviously, the club is happy with how he's going at the moment.
Well, I'm not. 73% of time on ground he had. 73% of the time.
That's almost team low, Macca, just for reference.
That's what?
That's team low, 73%.
Yeah, but
that's
still
not high, that's low.
It's a long time on the ground.
It's the same time as Riley Knight. It's one more percent than Brad Crouch.
So it's and he's had four possessions, of which one was a gift, which I don't believe he should have got from that not through from a point. Nothing he did there.
Going the rules.
Oh, Nicky, it could have been you there. He did nothing to earn it. He's earned three kicks. Or two, two kicks, one handball. If you're happy with that, and if we turn out 22 of him like that, we won't win it anywhere.
We're not turning out 22 like that, Macca. That's the thing, is we can carry him at the moment, knowing that he's actually running up and back. He is actually getting to spots, and there are a number of times on the vision, so go back and watch, where he was free. And he had his arms up, and he was calling for it, and he'd run hard to get there,
but he
was ignored by his teammates.
Wrong position.
Yeah, but he may be free, Nikki, but he may not be free in the positions that their system dictates that they direct the ball. My question and my take on Menz is that and this was the question mark when we actually went hard at him at trade. I don't actually think he's the type of player that we need up forward.
No,
we don't need an opportunistic mid-sized forward in our lineup. Now he's got an opportunity because Gov's down, and we could have given that opportunity to Jono Beach. But considering we've invested a lot more in Troy Menzel in terms of draft picks and probably salary and all the rest of it, he's been given the opportunity, but he doesn't provide a marking target. He doesn't provide a lead-up target. He does provide defensive pressure. He will get on the end of a couple because he does have good goal sense. But in terms of how our forward line works and in terms of how our transition system works, he's not actually, he's one of those players, like, you're always taught to get in amongst the play and to be in line between the ball and the goal so that you're in amongst the play. Menz always seems to be around the outside of the play when we're in transition. He's not demanding the ball, he's looking for that opportunistic possession, which is how he played when he was at Carlton. Also, when he was at Carlton, he was a focal point. He was playing full forward, or, he was one of their targets. So he was having the ball. We had more space, but he was also getting the ball fed to him. Now, we don't need to feed the ball to Menzel because we've got Tex, we've got Lynch, we've got Otten, we've got Gov when he plays, we've got JJ when he plays, we've got Eddie Betts. Menz is like, if I'm a Crows midfielder running through and I've got three or four targets and one of them's Menzel, I'm probably not going to go to him unless he's absolutely on his own. We've got other targets. So Menzel has to reinvent himself, and I don't think the AFL team is the place to do it. He needs to be realistic about where he is with his football, and he's either got to turn himself into a midfielder, which means another hard year on the track, or the only other position I can see him filling is a rebounding defender. And yet again, we've got tons of those as well.
On the midfield, that's where I can see what we've been doing with him, because the SNFL, Sturt game, first centre bounce, we started him in the centre. And he actually played the majority of the game in the midfield. So,
yeah, but Nick, that's SNFL.
That's where I think we're trying to push him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I don't see... I mean, who does he push out in our midfield? He probably doesn't even push out D-Mac. in our rotations.
No,
not yet.
So, you know, I think there's a lad that would be better in our midfield rotation, certainly being able to swing up forward and, as well, and that's Greenwood.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to next.
And I feel a bit for Menzel because he got drafted to a club that probably needed him when we drafted him, but it turns out we didn't because Mitch McGovern came on so well. You know, Charlie Cameron comes along so well. And we've all of a sudden got this amazing versatility up forward. And really, Menzel doesn't fit into that structure. So I feel for him a bit. And you'd almost say, should we trade him? Because I don't know whether it's worthwhile him staying in Adelaide.
I think that's a fair comment because, you know, Nicky was made various suggestions of other positions that he should go to. But Adelaide's a club that's in a very fortunate position. It's got very good drafters who have chosen very wisely. We've got a lot of young lads who would get games at other clubs, and they're waiting in line for their chance to have a game. And in my mind, he's behind them.
And the thing is, the knock on Menzel when we traded him was his work ethic. And I think the thing that he's actually proven, beyond a shadow of doubt, is his work ethic. He's worked very hard. But I just think in each section of the ground, whether you're talking forward line, whether you're talking midfield, or whether you're talking defence, he's fourth, fifth, sixth in line. And as I said, he's getting a game at the moment simply because of injuries. But if he wants to be a permanent part of the Adelaide Best 22, he needs to actually reinvent himself in another position. And quite frankly, if I was Troy, I'd be asking for a switch to Port.
Yeah, that's not so silly, actually, because, you know, Nicky said before when we were talking about Riley Knight, see ball, get ball. That's what he brings to the team. Then we talk about Lynch. He's a connector. He brings that to the team. And we talk about Charlie. He brings speed to the team. But Menzel at this stage, as you quite rightly said, Phoenix, is not bringing anything to that forward line at all.
No. And again, we're not saying he's not working hard. You know, he is working hard. I don't think he's necessarily working to the systems. And I don't think he's necessarily putting himself in positions where he demands the ball. I think he's always providing that speculative option. And he needs to put himself in positions where he demand the where he is a genuine link in the chain and he demands the ball. So anyway, that's my thoughts, and I'm sure we'll have a bit more of a chat on Tuesday night, but I just wanted to raise it. The other thing I want to raise just briefly before we switch quickly to the SANFL is hamstrings. That's 7 or 8 now, Macca?
8. It's 8, if you throw in Keith as well.
Yep.
Major concern because it's the second year of the program, and maybe it's... Do you remember when Port... had that particular year when they were pinging them all over the place? They said they were raising the level of their work by about 9 or 10% or something like that.
Remember when we got them 1 year and everyone was whinging about riding bikes when Craigie was coach?
I was actually, you stole my line. I was going to say, have we brought the bloody bikes back or something?
That's right. I don't know. It's it's the high ones that concern me because they can be quite nasty. You know, we've obviously trained for a different game style. We're playing a much harder running game. It requires a lot of two-way running. But when you start getting key posts, getting hammies like McGovern and particularly Talia and Keith in the twos, it does make you start to wonder whether perhaps they've just maybe targeted the wrong type of players.
I tell you what, Nicky, you go around the club quite a bit. Have you heard any talk about this?
And what I know is that the club, particularly the medical and the fitness staff, actually meet. I'm not sure whether it's every week, but it's definitely every two. And so that both are very much on the same page regarding all players, so that the fitness staff are very aware from the medical staff and like the massage and all that as to whether there is any issue with players. So in terms of, from what I understand, their due diligence, I don't think we could be doing anything better regarding that. as somebody who has perennial hamstring injuries and have been involved in quite a bit of sport, sometimes they just happen. And even if you don't seem to be training any differently, 1 year it happens, next year it doesn't.
I'd buy that for 3 or 4, Nick, but not 8.
But there are a few there. The club has actually said that we've taken our information and we have actually sought outside advice regarding this as well. So they've been proactive about it. And the one thing is we've got the two high hamstrings. Crouch's was different.
Keith's was high too, wasn't it?
No, I don't know whether Keith was high at all. But he's
been out for a while.
He is, but he's also come from cricket with a fast bowler, and he does have some form regarding those type of injuries because he's a fast bowler.
Look, and it's good that they're happening early on in the season.
Yeah.
But you'd hate for a recurrence late when things get a bit heavy on the ground and blokes are a bit tired, because that's when you tend to do your hammies, those fatigue hammies in the third quarter after in a heavy slog.
The interesting thing with Talia was, even though he did do it, he was then able to jog and he got a decent kick away where that leg was a planted leg, which is putting some stress on that hamstring. And he didn't grimace or anything when he did that kick. So I'm hoping it's not as bad as it appears.
Nikki, I heard very late today, 4 weeks.
Have they actually sent him off for scans? He would have only just come back on the plane today.
No, he hasn't. In fact, he stayed there overnight, and I think it's on Tuesday or Wednesday he's having the scans done. But they are thinking, probably this is their thinking, 4 weeks.
Mm. It didn't look as bad as Gov's.
No, you could
tell straight away that he was in a bit of strife.
And if they're saying 4 weeks, to me that thinks it's probably only possibly a 2 week hamstring, and then there's the 2 weeks.
No such thing as a 2 week hamstring. Hammies are always 3+.
They are.
Trust me, I played an entire season with one. that mean I'm tougher than they are, or I don't really run?
You play like a girl, Nikki.
No, you haven't seen our girls play.
That's a compliment. You play like a... Oh, wow, come on.
I know, they're awesome. I don't play. I play like somebody who's not very good.
Just on a different note, I just want to say hats off to Andy Otten, who's been substituted for Lever. He's substituted for Jenkins. He's substituted for Jacobs. Now he's going to substitute for down back. And this guy is a very, very handy footballer.
Yep. And it segues into my little outro, my final comment that you guys are welcome to comment on. With the injuries that we do have and, our ability to cover Talia, it speaks mountains to me of the system and the faith in the system that the coaching staff and the players have, that we can just slot a player in and he plays his role, slot a player in and he plays his role. We might drop another 2 next week with Tails definite and maybe Riley Knight as well, depending on how precautionary his hammy was. But we just seem to be able to play the system. I'm sure there'll be a tipping point. Hopefully we won't reach it. But it's compared to last year where everyone was saying, we played 29 players and that's why we were successful. Well, you can't say that this year about the Adelaide Crows, can you?
No, and it actually sort of lends a lot of weight to Nikki's theory that we've got a very good training structure and the players are taught what to do in terms when they do get their opportunity rather than just get thrown on the park.
It also says a lot about Pike's communication, because it's one thing to have a good structure,
yes,
but it's another thing to have 22 blokes and more, because you also got to have the blokes coming in on the same page and so fluent in what to do in what situation. And we just look like we're almost Crobot-like at the moment, dare I say it.
But with flair.
With flair, exactly.
When Walshy came in, one of the things he actually said about our group was how teachable they were.
Mm.
And that was something that Ogilvy said that he looked at when looking at players to draft, etc., was that ability. And I said this in the chat earlier, which was, I think last year was a bit of a case in point of Pike was learning us. And once he kind of, so he kind of kept that team fairly stable. And we had the team in the SNFL fairly stable. And because we've got that SNFL team, we have complete control over it. And they were very much playing the same system as what we played.
Yep.
And in the AFL.
Interesting, isn't it, that the last time we looked like a well-oiled machine, Don Pike was our midfield coach, now he's our head coach. Anyway, we have to wind it up there. And, of course, we'll talk about the game in a bit more depth on Tuesday night.
Can I just raise one point, and it's got nothing to do with our game. I just want to say very quickly about Shaw having to apologise for comment on
that. We haven't got time to talk about that tonight. We'll talk about that on Tuesday night, Macca.
Okay.
All right, this is a wrap-up show, not a commentary show. SNL, we lost. It didn't look good. We haven't got any players on the ground, and there's no stats available. Anything to add on that?
Haven't watched it. Not really inclined to.
I saw the side that we selected, and if you had a look at the side, well, there weren't that many Crow players there, and there were a lot of substitute players. So there.
11 AFL listed players in our side.
And the loss of Wigg and Crouch out of that midfield just showed.
So it's not
surprising, I don't think.
Yeah, Scotty Thompson looked average. We didn't have a back line. We started well. Jono Beach played a rider. We started well. But we just couldn't hold them, which isn't surprising, really, particularly out there. Anyway, final comments. We're looking all right, guys, I reckon. Don't know about you. What do you reckon, Nick?
Quite looking forward to seeing what Richmond serve up against Melbourne, considering they play on Monday and then have to face us on Friday.
Yeah, that's true. Macca?
Well, actually, Nicky stole my line, really, and because I'm amazed that they are actually going to have play after such a short break. So surely they're still going to be feeling all their bruises, etc.
Yeah, well. All right, thanks very much for joining us, guys. We will be back on Tuesday night for Tuesday Night Live, and we'll talk about the Heath Shaw, and we'll talk about the Anzac Day non-event, etc., etc. Follow us on AFL Crowcast on Facebook and Twitter. Give us a review and a like on iTunes, and we'll see you on Tuesday night. Night, guys.
Okay, night all.